I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Times. 50 years ago, Arctic Records in Philadelphia helped to launch the careers of a number of stars and gave aspiring singers a chance to cut a record. Here's Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff, who went on to found the legendary Philadelphia International Records back in 1966 with their song, The Joke's on You, recorded by Arctic Records. Arctic Records was founded by the popular Philadelphia DJ Jimmy Bishop and lawyer Harold Lipsius back in 1964. It's credited with putting the sound of Philadelphia soul music on the map, so to speak. Our guests are Harold's son, Frank Lipsius, president of Jamie Records, and Max Ochester, owner of Brewery Town Beats record store here in Philadelphia. They have teamed up to reissue many of Arctic's recordings. The first one is out, Cooler Than Ice. We'll play more cuts and talk about the Philadelphia sound and the artists who sang for Arctic. And Frank, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. And Max, nice to have you with us as well.
Hi, Marty.
So what's the sound, Frank, that we should associate with Arctic Records, this Philadelphia soul sound?
It's soft soul with strings that Barbara Mason pioneered when she sang Yes, I'm Ready, and but has a deep beat, and the instrumentation and the studio musicians who ended up being part of MFSB.
And how did your dad and this DJ Jimmy Bishop, how did they hook up?
Well, we'd known them for a long time. Jimmy was the music director at WDAS AM radio. And
very well-known station here and also very popular DJ.
Absolutely. And he started producing with three other gentlemen, John Stiles, Luther Randolph, and Weldon McDougall. And they together made Dino Dynamic Productions. They were leasing their records to other labels at the time, but they were in the studio every night, so they had more material than they could use. And since we were putting out records in Philadelphia ourselves, right, they got together to do it together.
So what do you hear, Max, in this music? And we're going to play a lot more during the hour.
I guess I've always been more into Philly funk and soul, and this label started out very soulful, lots of strings. At some point, it changed into a funkier 70s type label, and that's what I was really interested in first.
Well, you had mentioned Barbara Mason and the song Yes, I'm Ready, written and performed by Barbara Mason. This goes back to 1965, and I have to say it's one of the songs of my adolescence. So I'm going to take a little sentimental journey, and let's listen to Barbara Mason, Yes, I'm Ready, written and performed by her from 1965 on Arctic Records.
Just the way
Barbara Mason, her song from 1965, Yes, I'm Ready, recorded on Arctic Records. And Frank, what's the story behind this?
They were finished the recording, and then Weldon McDougal, who had produced it, wanted to have strings. He waited out back at the Philadelphia Orchestra at the Academy of Music and waited for somebody to come out with a violin case, went up to him and said that he was looking for violinists, and he thought he was going to need 16 violinists, and he ran into somebody who had already been doing rock and roll, and he said, "Oh no, we can get away with 8." So he was very happy, and there were 8 members of the Philadelphia Orchestra on that record.
And that's the string section that we hear on this song.
Yes.
What do we need to know about Barbara Mason? Do you want to weigh in on that, Max?
Well, I know she's still active. That's really all I know. She's still out singing. And at this time, I believe this was recorded for Hawthorne, was it, Frank, or no?
No, well, it was recorded. I think that there's a story that Jerry Wexler from Atlantic Records turned it down, and it became the centerpiece of Arctic Records. Mm-hmm. She was a teenager. She was brought in. She worked with other musicians or other singers, and the others gradually dropped out. And she and Weldon had a relationship where he was nurturing her and mentoring her, and they came into the studio and did this.
Go ahead.
I think she was 16 at the time, too.
Yeah. I have to say, I just love the way that sort of vulnerability in her voice.
Yeah.
Well, there's a story in the company that with each of the producers having a night, there was a fight over the Thursday night that she was supposed to do it. And Weldon insisted that he had brought her in to do this recording, and he intended to do it. And Jimmy Bishop said, no, I want to finish off something else. Oh. So Barbara was very upset as a young teenager and ran out. And Weldon finally caught up with her and said, come on back and let's do it. And so part of the feeling is the frustration of not really getting in on the time at the time she was supposed to. And Weldon also felt that spontaneity was important, so he was not trying to do it over and over again. This is the first or second take of that record.
Max, your store is all about vinyl records. As you listen to the music that came out of Arctic, and we're talking about 64 to what, 68, 69, mm-hmm. you know, a very specific period in a very specific city in Philadelphia. That soul sound that came out, how distinctive is it, do you think?
I mean, it's being the precursor to Philly International was one of the biggest things. But Philadelphia had its own sound. Detroit had a sound.
Right.
New Orleans even had a sound. L.A., you know, all these small or cities with smaller labels that were really trying to put themselves on the map. And Arctic was definitely the most representational of that sound in Philadelphia at the time.
Well, I would think the churches, the clubs, I mean, you know, where your dad and others, Frank, you know, found these singers, or did they find Arctic Records?
It was a combination, but with 4 producers, they were out in the neighborhoods, and Philadelphia is very neighborhood oriented. So when somebody knew something was going on, other people would know about it too. And also radio station WDAS was a community center as well. You would go in there and there would be people sitting around waiting to talk to a disc jockey or a promotion man or an artist who would come in. I remember seeing James Brown there sitting and talking to Georgie Woods.
Wow. Oh, Georgie Woods. Yeah.
I think a lot of stuff came from talent shows too. There were these amateur talent shows set up around town, and the Uptown Theater was one of the biggest ones. And, you know, a group later in the label, the Ambassadors, they showed up after a baseball game to the talent show, and there were supposed to be 10 on the bill, and somebody, the doorman, actually begged the producer to let them go on, and they got the deal. They won the money, and it was a deal. It was either a $300 gift or a contract, and they took the $300.
Well, let me play one more song that kind of picks up on that. This is a group called The Volcanoes, which I believe they went to John Bartram High School in Philadelphia. And this is a song called It's Against the Laws of Love, written by Carlton Fisher, and again performed by The Volcanoes. And this is from 1965. Of Love, written by Carlton Fisher, performed by the Volcanoes, going back to 1965 on Arctic Records. What do we need to know about the Volcanoes, right?
The Volcanoes was a self-contained group, which was not usual at the time, and their drummer was Earl Young, who went on to his own independent fame. And they've been recently reconstituted so that Steve Kelly, who organized them originally, took them over to England in March for a Northern Soul Weekender in Prestatyn, Scotland, Wales.
So this group that graduated or went to Bartram High School, performed for Arctic Records, still performing?
And yes, and they're a huge hit in England and Wales.
So what does that tell us, Max?
The resurgence of this music, it's not just, you know, my interest and in Frank's, you know, constant interest since his, you know, it's his business. It's all over the world, people are starting to really pick up on this stuff and realize where the roots of Philadelphia soul music came from. And by Frank putting together the Cooler Than Ice box set, yeah, was a big step because it kind of put everything in one place.
And put Philly on the map, like Motown and Detroit?
Sure. I mean, Motown's always something to look up to, and it always has been. And I think at the time, Jimmy Bishop was even, you know, looking to try to be like Motown with his arrangements and the label. But I think Arctic has somehow, you know, been able to stay by itself, and people are starting to look at it now as a label, and it's highly collectible. It's, you know, people really love it, and they're looking for all the oddball stuff.
Well, we're going to play some more music. Some of it oddball, some of it not so oddball at all. Talking with Max Ochester and Frank Lipsius. So we are talking about Arctic Records, the music that was performed here in Philadelphia, recorded by Arctic Records. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. If you remember this music, give us a call. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. The Philadelphia label Arctic Records launched the careers of a number of people, including Kenny Gamble, we heard earlier, Daryl Hall. It lasted less than a decade in the 1960s. Major labels made it just too tough to compete, but thankfully those songs are not lost. Jamie Records, in conjunction with the Philadelphia record store Brewery Town Beats, are reissuing many of the songs on vinyl, and we are playing some of these songs on Radio Times with our guest, Max Ochester, owner and operator of the Brewery Town Beats record store, and also Frank Lipsius, the current president of Jamie Records, and his father was the founder, co-founder of Arctic Records. Calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And Frank, your dad was a lawyer and just loved this music. Is that how he got involved?
He originally got involved through a client whom he considers one of the unsung geniuses of the music business, named Dave Miller, who started out after World War II recording people's events like a wedding or a confirmation. And then he found that there was a backup in getting the vinyl records made of it, so he went into the manufacturing of records, and then he started a record label. One of his artists, one of the groups was Bill Haley and the Saddlemen. And
did that become Bill Haley and the Comets?
He made them sing some rock and roll, and then they became Bill Haley and the Comets. He decided not to be in the distribution business anymore in 1955, and my father, who was his lawyer, to keep the people who were employed there working, took over his part of it, and then we started a label a year later, in just about the time that Dick Clark started American Bandstand.
Oh, wow, just to put that into some context. And your dad had several labels besides Arctic.
Yes, each era seemed to generate a different label to reflect the period and the music that was coming out of that period.
And who came up with the name Arctic? My understanding was that there was already an Atlantic. Was this Jimmy Bishop?
It was Jimmy Bishop who, in admiration of Atlantic, picked another ocean.
Oh, picked the Arctic Ocean. Well, let me play another song. And this is interesting. It's Goodbye by Barry Glaser and Daryl Hall, produced by Jimmy Bishop, performed by the Temptones. This goes back to 1967. I wonder, Max, if you could talk a little bit about this song, and also we know the name Daryl Hall, although he didn't have the name Hall at this time.
Right. This was another talent show group. They were performing, I believe, at the Uptown Theater again, and Daryl Hall showed up, and when they walked out on stage, it was five white guys, and the crowd was booing. And apparently the story that I think it was Daryl said was the band was intentionally trying to mess them up as they played, and once they started singing, that all went away, and the crowd really got behind them, and it became a really big hit. You know, this is... It's a great song.
Yeah, it is. And the Temptones. I mean, that sounds, Frank, a lot like the Temptations. Was that a problem?
It certainly wasn't a problem. And the only problem was the confusion with where it came from. They originally were actually the Templetones because they all went to Temple.
Ah.
And then they shortened it from the from Templetones. So the confusion is only because the tribute to Temple was lost.
And we should say Daryl Hall, H-A-L-L, that's how we know him now. What was his original last name?
It was pronounced the same and spelled H-O-H-L.
Oh, just to kind of put that all in context. Well, let's listen to Goodbye by Barry Glaser, Daryl Hall, and again produced by Jimmy Bishop, performed by the Temptones from 1967 on Arctic Records. Daryl Hall singing Goodbye by Barry Glaser and Daryl Hall, produced by Jimmy Bishop, performed by the Temptones from 1967 on this Arctic Records. Frank, do we hear Jimmy, I mean, if it's produced by Jimmy Bishop and he had a lot to do with the way these songs sounded, what was his approach? What was his kind of signature on a song?
He really was the ally of the artist and cajoled the best performance out of them as he could. He used other arrangers and musicians who could take care of the music themselves because he wasn't really music oriented. He was feeling and personality oriented toward the performers.
And how would he do that? I mean, do you know and do you remember seeing him work?
We were pretty close to Jimmy Bishop, and he was extremely personable and just tried to make people comfortable and told them what he would like to get out of it and cajoled them into doing the best performance they could and didn't try to exhaust them, but try to give them a mental picture of what they were doing so that they could do the best they could.
And Max, do you hear a kind of Jimmy Bishop stamp on some of these songs?
Yeah, I hear it throughout the entire label, of course. You know, at some point he makes an interesting switch, but this earlier stuff, he, you can really hear his sound. I mean, you hear Dino Dynamic as well, but the production team, the guys who orchestrated and wrote a lot of the music for it, Weldon and Johnny Styles and Luther Randolph. But Jimmy definitely, you know, the producer wears a lot of hats still to today. And Jimmy definitely, as Frank was saying, is you know, try to get the best performance out of his artist, of what he thought it should sound like.
What's it like for you to go through these archives?
It's incredible.
And where are they? I mean, where have they been?
In the Arctic offices in downtown Philly. I mean, they've been there forever. There's tape room with master tapes. And, you know, at some point in the 90s, Frank's father, I believe, worked with a company to transcribe them. So we have them on DATs.
Oh, on DATs. Not CDs.
Well, DATs were then transferred to CDs.
Right,
but yeah,
right.
But to go through, and you know, it's really interesting. There's one thing. There's a version of "Love Addict" by Honey and the Bees, which there's about 10 different cuts on these tapes that I've listened to, and they're almost all exactly the same, even though they're all performed live. So you can hear some variation in the way Nadine Felder sings during it, but most of it is just exactly the same. So it's like dry cut after dry cut. And it's really interesting to hear that. You know, some part of me wants this crazy new version that nobody ever heard.
Or to hear several takes on something.
Right. But it also might be the way the tapes were cut originally. You know, that's something I'm interested in finding out.
Yeah.
Because I'm listening to a later version of the tape. But it's really interesting, especially with the Love Addict, because it's such a great song.
Yeah.
And then there's barely any change in it, which is interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. So Arctic Records, where is that? Where is that headquartered? And is that where it's always been?
No, the company's moved a few places. At the time it was active in the 60s, it was on North Broad Street. Now we're on South Broad Street. And in the middle, we were on Richmond Street in Fishtown.
Oh, sure. And were the recordings, were they always there? Or did Jimmy Bishop have some of the recordings?
There was, in Jimmy Bishop's basement, a cache of tapes that were unknown that included the original of Yes, I'm Ready, which we thought had been burned in a fire. There had been a fire with a number of tapes that Dino Dynamic suffered. But then they found that tape and a number of other tapes. But the bulk of them had always been with us through the years.
And reel to reel, I mean, that doesn't last forever. 50 years later?
They're pretty durable. There was a period when they were using a kind of matrix that now needs to be baked in order to listen to, and then those are ruined. But luckily, we had very few of those.
Oh, that's great. Well, let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you, and that's Frank Lipsius, son of Arctic Records co-founder Harold Lipsius. He and Max Ochester have been digging through the vaults of Arctic to find original tapes of some of the most notable songs. We've been playing selections on Radio Times, and Max Ochester is the owner of Brewery Town Beats here in Philadelphia. If you want to join the conversation, if this music touches some memory for you, do give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And if you're hearing this for the first time, tell us what you hear. Tell us what you think. Let me get Steve from Audubon to join us. Steve, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, great walk down memory lane. Two quick points. Number one, this was an era where disc jockeys were incredibly powerful. Jimmy Bishop, Georgie Woods, Sonny Hobson, Jocko on DAS and ACT. Really powerhouse people. Secondly, the role of the Uptown Theater is really important. I went with a bunch of friends of mine from Cheltenham High School down to the Uptown in 66, 67. Of course, lying to our parents as to where we were really going on a Friday night. But you saw every act there from James Brown to Little Stevie Wonder to Otis Redding. But it was also a political center. Georgie Woods was very active, and I can remember a Republican candidate for governor being introduced to the audience, met with incredible indifference by the audience. But nonetheless, the Uptown was Philadelphia's Apollo. And we'll always remember going down there on a Friday night to the delight of those who who went. And one just last memory, there was a reference earlier in the conversation to Paul getting booed. There was an old group from Harrisburg called the Magnificent Men. It was a white group from Harrisburg, but they had a so-called blue-eyed soul sound. And they sang at Pier, the only white group I can ever remember at the Uptown. They sang and brought down the house.
That's great.
So again, great program, but a real walk down memory lane.
Steve, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Now your parents know where you were on Friday night back in the 1960s. Do you want to talk about the DJs and the role that DJs played, Frank? And I'm thinking of Jimmy Bishop in particular. I mean, here he is working with these artists, and I'm assuming playing them on his radio station. I'm not sure if that's legal anymore, but go ahead.
I think that it was pretty well accepted at the time. In the period just before this period of Arctic Records, Philadelphia DJs not only had the importance of playing records and having the latitude of Steve, as Steve said, to play what they wanted and therefore had a lot of importance, but Dick Clark for American Bandstand would have be listening to other stations, and he was friends with Georgie Woods, and a lot of what came on American Bandstand was based on what he was hearing going on in Philadelphia. So Philadelphia had an outsized importance in the whole development of rock and roll. The disc jockeys, because they had record hops and were very much involved in the community, not only played what was popular, but made things popular. And as Steve said, in a case of WDAS disc jockeys, yeah, and Georgie Woods in particular, they, yeah, had a lot of political importance.
And the Uptown, he describes it as Philadelphia's Apollo.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it definitely was. One other side note, there's Jimmy Bishop put out an album at some point that was live at the Nixon Theater. So that was another one. And it was on a label that Jimmy started himself, named after his daughter, Mika. And it's not easy to find because it was a very limited press. But if you can search it down, it's well worth a listen because it has live. Billy Stewart doing Summertime was the headliner. And the Ambassadors were on it, and, you know, Delphonics. There were a few Philly groups, a lot of Philly groups.
Let me play another song from Arctic Records. This is Don't Make the Good Girls Go Bad by Clarence Reed and Jackie Corbett, performed by Della Humphrey. We'll talk about her. This is from 1968. Again, Della Humphrey, the song Don't Make the Good Girls Go Bad. That's a great song, Frank.
It is. She was a 13-year-old when she sang that.
She was 13 years old?
Yes. Oh. But
she was from Miami, right? Yeah.
She was from Miami. She was one of the few non-Philadelphia artists on the label. She got to the label by Jimmy Bishop running into her producers at a disc jockey convention, which is a notorious event from the 1960s, but some business did get done. And Clarence Reed,
he says, as an aside, no, go ahead.
Clarence Reed was later Blowfly and a very well-known singer in his own right. He produced Della and did a wonderful job. I had dinner with her recently, and she's a really wonderful person.
Yeah. Wow. What do you hear, Max?
This, first of all, Della Humphrey is my favorite artist on Arctic, for sure. Just the innocence. I think it has a lot to do with her age, but the sound of her voice and the way that she expressed, you know, the songs that were given to her is amazing. This also marks, you know, the change that I see in Arctic from Jimmy Bishop moving away from the Dino Dynamic guys that orchestrated, heavier orchestrated material into, I think he was watching James Brown and what was happening with him. And it, you can hear it. You can hear it's funkier. It's got more horns. It's a little more dark in subject matter. It's not the teeny bopper, you know, stuff we were listening to before.
Well, here's a 13-year-old Della Humphrey saying, "Don't make the good girls go bad." I mean, you know, that does raise some questions, does it not, Frank?
Oh, no question it does. But she retained her innocence, and she didn't necessarily have to understand what she was singing. Right. She had a great voice.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about Arctic Records, a Philadelphia label that goes back to the 1960s. It lasted for about 4 or 5 years or so here in the city. And thank goodness the music is not lost. The sound has not been lost. It's been reissued on Arctic Records. We are playing selections from Cooler Than Ice, and our guests are Max Ochester and Frank Lipsius. 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and do stay with us much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. And if you're just joining us, our guests are Max Ochester, owner and operator of the Brewery Town Beats record store here in Philadelphia, helping to reissue the Arctic Records label. Also with us, Frank Lipsius. He's the current president of Jamie Records, which has the Arctic Records imprint. His dad, Harold, was co-founder of Arctic Records, along with a local DJ here, Jimmy Bishop. 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Robert from Wilmington to join us. Robert, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Marty. Great show. You guys just took me back 52 years to the time when I worked in the Bella, Pennsylvania mailroom with the lead singer of the Volcanoes, a wonderful guy named Bob Cook. And he sold me two of their first two records, which I still have. I only lack a 45 RPM turntable. But maybe I have to get up to a Brewertown beat. But, yeah, he sold me two records. I think they were 98 cents for the two.
Well, hold on to those. And vinyl 45s are making a comeback, are they not, Max?
Indeed.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what we've been doing, is trying to figure out what is going to come out and what's going to sound good on record again. And there's just so much interest in it now. People want the original format. They want different versions of what we have. You know, it's the whole market is exploding right now for that kind of stuff.
And is it just that sort of, I won't say purity of sound, because a 45 has a sound like a 45.
Yeah, it sounds like a 45.
If I can put it that
way. It's not necessarily. I mean, there is a movement back towards analog and away from digital, but I think it's the tangible. It's being able to hold something in your hand, being able to feel it, looking at all the credits, looking at the label art, I think is big. In reissuing LPs, the artwork is a big thing. You know, you don't want to, you know, you want to kind of get it as true to the original as possible. I think that's what people really appreciate. And with these new vinyl reissues, we are trying to add as much extra as possible, you know, promo pictures and bios of the artists and like original artifacts from the label if they have any and stuff like that, just, you know, ephemera.
Well, speaking of recently reissued, this is Music Makes You Want to Dance. This is Honey and the Bees. And Frank, do you want to set this up at all?
Honey and the Bees was one of the groups. It was the only full female group on Arctic Records. There were female artists, obviously, like Barbara Mason and Cindy Gibson, but and the Tiffany's were the very first artists on the label, but they were background singers. They only had one release. Honey and the Bees lasted for most of the second half of the career of Arctic Records. And this was one of the songs that they recorded but never came out on vinyl originally. We put it on a CD of Honey and the Bees, and Max picked it up off of the CD. It's a song that the Ambassadors had done in an entirely different version, not the same backing band at all or arrangement. And so this is the first thing we put out with vocal on one side and instrumental on the other.
Music Makes You Want to Dance by Honey and the Bees. Music Makes You Want to Dance by Honey and the Bees on this Arctic label. And listening to this, Max, I mean, this is a pretty cool song.
Yeah, this is great. This was it was recorded in 1968 in December, I believe, by Honey and the Bees. And then Jimmy Bishop, who's in charge of everything, you know, he had the Ambassadors recorded a month later.
Yeah.
And I guess they needed another song on their album that they were going to go put out. And there were already plans for that. So I think Jimmy decided to put that song on, where it meant that this Honey and the Bees version kind of got shelved.
Well,
until Frank put it on a CD. And that's the first time anybody really heard it. And what was that, 98? Something like that?
In the early 2000s.
Yeah, early 2000s. So that's where I became familiar with it, with help from a local DJ friend. And I said this would be a great track to come out, because this is really what people want, is they want something interesting. We put it out on vinyl only. It is on a SoundCloud, so you can still listen to it if you want to in full. But the reason we put it out on vinyl was to kind of give, you know, some life back into the Arctic label, to try to see, like, show people that there's stuff out there that they haven't heard. So.
And she's your neighbor up in Brewerytown, right?
Yeah, yeah. Miss Nadine is still in the neighborhood. I met her. She was working at the Brewerytown Community Center for a while. She's not there anymore, but I ran into her, and this was before any of this happened, you know. And I said, you know, I really like your music, and I'm happy to meet you. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
I love some of the band names, Frank. Teddy and the Finger Poppers, Light Lunch and the Freeloaders.
I think these were made-up names for those particular productions. For the most part, they were studio productions, and then they put a label on them afterwards.
Let me get looks like Joel from Westchester to join us on Radio Times. Joel, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
I actually used to
work with Frank about 9 or 10 years ago when he worked for a judge down in Philadelphia. How are you doing, Frank?
Great. How are you, Joel?
Small world.
Good to see you, and good to hear from you, I should say.
Nice.
Thank you guys for re-releasing this stuff. I was a little young for the initial releases, but I was a big Hall & Oates fan as a kid, and it's really great to hear the old Daryl Hall and then some of the other music you guys are putting out. I really wanted to thank you guys for getting that out there.
Well, it's nice of you, Joel, to call into Radio Times. Mm-hmm. I mean, we enjoy these shows because it's fun to go down memory lane and play a little music on the radio. We have an email from Anne Marie saying, great show. For many years, worked with a physician in Philadelphia area whose dad was Bernie Binnick, owner of Swan Records in Philadelphia in the 1960s. Do you know him? Did Swan have any association or relationship with Arctic, Frank?
No, they ran on parallel tracks pretty much.
But obviously there was a lot going on in the city music-wise.
Absolutely. Swan and Jamie were sharing an audience, a source of music, and using the same tools to try to get music out into the marketplace and try to get some hits. And Swan did extremely well, so that actually was a bigger label than ours for quite a long time.
Well, let me play something really different. This is really interesting. This is Jimmy Bishop speaking, I should say, If You Could See Through the Eyes of a Black Man. This is also on Arctic Labels by Louise Bishop, performed by Jimmy Bishop, and this is 1969, just so we hear what Jimmy Bishop sounds like.
If you could see through the eyes of a black man, how different things would be. You'd see the mark of these invisible chains on a man that's supposed to be free. If you could see through the eyes of a black man, you'd stumble for many of miles over those stones and rocks of prejudice and still be expected to smile. If you could see through the eyes of a black man, there'd be no thought of color, just one big happy family, where every man would be your brother. You live in a lily-white neighborhood, just out of town about a mile. But come on back and try living with me, ghetto style. The eyes of a black man. Yes, the eyes of a black man. If you could see through the eyes of a black man, how happy I'd be. For there'd be no more ghetto for me.
And that's Jimmy Bishop, co-founder of Arctic Records. If You Could See Through the Eyes of a Black Man, and a very well-known DJ here in Philadelphia on WDAS, and a very political, strong statement.
Yes, right? he doesn't get as much credit as Georgie Woods for being politically active, but he did what he could, and this was one of the things he was doing.
Well, and that DJ voice, I mean, you know, there's no getting around that.
From a record standpoint, it's an incredible record. It's, you know, first of all, you get to hear him, like you said, which most producers don't get on the microphone. Also, it kind of, to me, you know, in studying the label, this is kind of the end of it. He just wanted to, this is his, like, goodbye, you know, with the whole label. Also, it wasn't put out in a large production. It was probably the least produced record, you know, manufactured record on the whole label. So it's pretty rare to find. But it's a interesting song written by Louise Bishop, who was a gospel singer and has gone on to other things.
Let me do one more song. And actually, we have two more, but let me do one more. This is Put a Dime on It, written by Kenny Gamble and Jimmy Bishop, performed by The Rotations from 1965. Put a dime on D9, just to get that correct.
Sweet things we used to do, just like walking in the park and kissing, making sweet love.
So, put another dime,
put a dime on D9.
So who are the Rotations, Frank?
They were really a group put together in the studio at the end, and they used this backing track to put out this record. The other side is the same thing on instrumental, and that instrumental was also the backing track for Barbara Mason's performance of Bobby Is My Baby.
Little recycling there, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So what put Arctic Records out of business?
I think the times were changing. As Max said, Jimmy got more involved in politics. They hadn't had a lot of hits over the latter period of time. The music was great, but things were starting to move on, and Jimmy as well.
Yeah. For you?
Yeah, sure. I think everybody involved in the early Arctic recordings, I mean, mainly Kenny Gamble, Leon Huff, when Jimmy decided to get rid of the Dino Dynamic sound, you know, he tried to take it and lead the ship by himself. And I think, you know, if you don't have a hit, it's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, and you need hits.
Yeah,
right?
You need hits. And I think the people who were hitting at that time were the James Browns, you know, and he was looking to be that, but it just fell under, you know, what the mainstream was doing.
Well, we're going to close things out with Ain't Got the Love. This is the instrumental by the Ambassadors, recently reissued by Jamie Records in conjunction with Brewery Town Beats. Yep. Do you want to set this up for us, Max?
Sure. This is a track that I knew going into it that this would be the most desirable track on Arctic, mainly because the crowd I'm trying to hit is the DJ crowd who's going to play this in the clubs. And this was a song that was sampled in 1993 by Pete Rock and CL Smooth. So That's where it is.
Well, Max Ochester, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. Owner and operator of the Brewery Town Beats record store in Philadelphia, Frank Lipsius, thank you for joining us as well.
This was fun. Thank you.
Fun for us as well. Current president of Jamie Records, which has the Arctic Records imprint. Our special thanks, as always, to Kevin Griffin when we do our music shows. Radio Times produced by Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, John Ahrens, and Liz Fiedler. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. This is Ain't Got the Love by the Ambassadors, recently reissued by Jamie Records in conjunction with Brewery Town Beats.